I'm Ben Langston, and this is the Up and Down Podcast. In this podcast, I interview everyday people about a time in their lives when they felt up and a time in their lives when they felt down. It's a really simple concept, and I'm going to follow it because I really think it's good to hear people's stories and think about how they relate to all of us. Our experiences of life obviously vary quite a lot, but the emotions we feel because of those experiences are similar and can show us that we're not always alone. I believe all of us need to share more about how we feel in life. Everyone has stories to tell, and I want them to be able to tell these stories on the podcast. If you like what you hear and would like to support what I'm doing, then you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/updown. If not, that's completely fine. I just hope that you get something out of listening to other people's stories. Hi Kim, and welcome to the Up and Down Podcast. How are you today?
I'm grand, thank you.
Good, good. So yeah, I'm just going to start by asking you to introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Kim. I'm in my mid-30s. I'm a counsellor from North Wales, but I've been living in Bristol for about 12 years.
And can I just ask why you decided to come on the podcast?
I guess I've always struggled with my mental health. But it's sort of always been manageable alongside work or study or whatever I've been up to at that point. But I guess a couple of years ago, my whole world kind of got turned upside down and nothing felt very manageable at all. So I guess it's just to tell my own narrative, I suppose. Okay. But also, I think anyone kind of speaking out about their mental health difficulties, you know, if someone listens and kind of relates to what I'm saying, then that might be helpful for them or interesting, I would hope.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, so we can just get into it, I suppose. So I give everyone the option. I might stop giving people the option because everyone always starts with one particular thing. Would you prefer to start with the up or with the down?
The down.
Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. That's fair enough. So yeah, whenever you're ready, you can start to talk about it.
Okay. So I guess it's a real bombardment of things. There's a car accident, there's physical health, there's mental health, there's a breakup.
Okay.
There's other illnesses going on in the family. So it's a real sort of tidal wave of bollocks, really.
Okay.
It was horrendous. So I guess I'll start maybe the end of 2016. I started feeling really, really drained, and just wiped out, really struggling with my low mood.
Mm-hmm.
And just felt really, really vacant all the time. I was in a relationship at the time, living with someone. I wasn't wholly convinced he was being faithful.
Okay.
To me. And then at Christmas time it all kind of came to a head, and we broke up really early on in the January.
Okay. Was that 2017 then?
Yeah, so okay. Right at the beginning of 2017. Obviously January is a crappy time of year for anyone. And I then had I think my ex at the time had a car accident, which was quite a major one, but he very much sort of brushed it under the carpet. So I was quite worried about him, even though we'd broken up and he was soon to move out. It was quite a sort of fractious time where I was in limbo because I was sort of struggling with being really worried about him, but also that awareness that he was going to be moving out in 2 weeks.
Okay.
And it was just really strange time. And then I had a car accident, and this was the beginning of February. It was quite a minor car accident, but the sort of effects that had on me were really, really major. I was obviously in shock when, after the accident, initially, unsurprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
I was stationary, and this car had sort of come into the side of me, probably about 30, so not particularly fast, but what happened to my neck during the accident is, I think, what sort of brought on a whole load of physical health issues that have sort of been the bane of my life, really, for the last 2.5 years.
Mm.
I noticed I just never regained my energy levels from that point onwards. I felt like I'd changed, like, irreparably forever. Okay. And I kind of later thought of it in terms of PTSD, like, because
right.
that's what it was. So that was what was going on for me kind of mentally. The physical side was the lack of energy and the weight gain.
Mm.
There was, like, almost 4 stone of weight gain over the next year and a half.
Okay.
And I was really, really convinced that that was a thyroid problem.
Mm.
But several appointments to the GP hadn't resulted in that diagnosis, which was, I just felt completely hopeless and helpless, really. I'd tried to, well, just best I could, survive, really. I was kind of feeling like I was wading through treacle on a daily basis, sort of grieving for my, for the relationship.
Yeah.
My head was banging for the first couple of months and I couldn't really lift my arms above my shoulders to kind of wash my hair or anything. So initially I'd had like a month off work with the physical stuff. And then I'd gone back to work for about 3 months on a phased return, thinking that I'd be somehow like okay at the end of it. But actually by the end of it, I think that was the beginning of the worst bit. Like, okay. I really didn't think things could get worse, but that's when the sort of real PTSD kicked in.
And at this time, were you still, was your ex-boyfriend still living with you? Were you still trying to support him after his, okay.
After my accident, he'd already moved out by the time I'd had my accident. And I think that was another thing that sort of took away part of my resilience.
Okay.
Was that I was living alone after a period of living with someone. So it was like all of a sudden I'm single, I've got this head injury and neck injury, and I'm feeling hopeless and helpless, and I'm also living alone for the first time in a while. So it was just really horrible situation. I felt really almost like I didn't know myself and that I didn't want to be around anyone that knew me, because I couldn't be the person that any of them knew.
Right, okay.
Very much felt like an outsider in my own life.
And how did that make you feel to not be able to, you know, talk to your friends or people who were around you to potentially offer you support?
Really scared, I suppose, because I guess in my friendships maybe I've been the person that listens rather than speaks about my mental health issues. It's probably why I went on to train as a counsellor. It kind of goes in with the job. But I felt really scared, actually, because I couldn't put into words how I was feeling. It was just this sense of absolute doom. And that really sort of kicked in after the physical pain had gone, after about a month of the accident, you know, month after the accident. It was the mental stuff that took over, and that was, I'd have these spells of feeling absolute dread and fear for no reason whatsoever. So my body would go into this fight or flight response for no reason. Like, I remember one day I was at Temple Meads and I just had this feeling that something really awful was about to happen to me, and I was paralysed with fear.
Okay.
I was sort of looking around, like, so paranoid that everyone was looking at me, or everyone was thinking, you know, what a weirdo, what's she doing here? Yeah, I wish I'd kind of turned home and gone home that day, but instead I got on the train and kind of tried to calm myself. Got to work, and this sense of dread hadn't left. And I was really scared at that point that I was just going to end my life. I just sort of thought, this can't go on. Mm. So I just kind of sat in an office with a colleague, but just completely broke down and was like, I can't go on living like this, really. Just feel panicked all the time, have these waves of anxiety, wasn't really sleeping properly. I didn't really feel like I was eating that much, but I was still continuing to gain weight really rapidly.
And how did talking to that colleague at work make you feel?
She was great. She was, I guess she kind of treated me how I would have treated a client, which is what I wanted at that point, because I was in a vulnerable place and I didn't want someone to turn around and be like, well, you know, you're a professional, get yourself together, and you know, you've got some clients later on. It was nothing like that. It was like very much like, well, you know, if you were a client, what would you tell that client to do? You tell them to go and take care of themselves. So she kind of gave me permission to do what I knew I needed to do, which was go home.
Okay.
And I went home and I didn't go back to work for about 2 months.
Okay.
Just completely folded into myself. For most of that time, I was staying with my brother in Cardiff. I kind of just couldn't even cope. It's weird. I couldn't cope being alone. I couldn't cope being around people.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
So at my brother's house, at least I had the attic to myself. Mm. But I could go down and socialise with him and his wife and niece and nephew.
Did you talk to them about how you were feeling? Did they know how you were feeling completely?
Not so much my brother. He's quite emotionally shut down. And not with my niece and nephew, because it wouldn't have been appropriate. But my sister-in-law, yeah, I mean, she's had her own difficulties with mental health, so I was able to talk to her at times, but also really aware that I didn't have my own kids, and I could see, watching their family dynamics, how difficult it is to bring up kids. So I didn't want to burden them.
Yeah.
So I wrote in my journal a lot, I suppose, because I didn't want to burden them. Or I guess I would be really low during the day whilst they were at work. And when they would come home, I'd try and put on a brave face.
Okay.
I was still really, really struggling with my energy levels. At that point, I'd had several blood tests. And it wasn't until about a year later, I'd sort of dragged myself back to work after 2 months.
Okay.
And slowly things, I felt more steady. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't, you know, my energy levels didn't come back, but I felt more stable mentally. But it was another year after that I got my diagnosis of hypothyroidism.
Okay.
Which is what I thought was the case quite soon after the accident. So I felt like I was sort of knocking on closed doors, like welded shut closed doors, in terms of getting a diagnosis.
Did you feel able to continue to kind of keep pushing the professionals?
Not for the first year. So obviously the accident was like February 2017, and I didn't get my diagnosis until September 2018.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
So it was a year and a half of blood tests, appointments, phone calls asking for the GP to phone me back.
And did that, I guess, that added to your kind of levels of stress, because, you know, having
absolutely.
To chase that?
Or just not feeling validated. It kind of added to that feeling of that sort of imposter syndrome that I was having. You know, I felt like, God, if I've got PTSD, I shouldn't be at work, because, you know, I should be a client. I shouldn't be working here. Or I just felt, maybe I shouldn't be here with my family. They've got their own things to deal with. I was always looking for reasons for me not to belong, or that my experiences weren't valid enough. It's that sort of conflict, because on the other hand, I was thinking that maybe I'm not really that bad. Maybe I'm, you know, over-egging it, and that maybe I should just pull myself together and get back to work. So I was just in turmoil, really.
So do you think that
whole time?
Yeah, no, it does sound like a really, really tough and difficult time. And I think it's good that you were able to, I think, you know, be around people that would care for you, you know, kind of unconditionally in some ways, in terms of family. I wonder about your profession and whether that kind of added to your levels of kind of introspection and thinking potentially that you should or shouldn't be feeling in particular ways. Do you think that was at all valid, or?
Yeah, I think because I mean, there wasn't any doctors that were willing to tell me that I had PTSD. They weren't willing to name it.
Okay.
But that's what I knew it was, because of my work.
Mm.
So I guess I've got that added benefit that I've studied mental health. And I work with people with poor mental health, so I kind of know what to look for and how people might be feeling. But even still, there was this sort of feeling of being fraudulent. I guess it's like when you phone in sick and you just feel, even though you're telling the truth, you feel guilty and wrong for doing it.
Yeah.
I felt like that for the whole time I was off work, for the whole 3 months. And I don't think it helped that when I'd gone back to work initially after the physical stuff was sort of feeling healed, I didn't have a supportive manager.
Okay.
I kind of felt like I was, like there was this one instance, I've been doing groups, like group therapy for years in my role, and he'd asked to do a group with me, like to see how I was getting on with the group interaction. And because of the PTSD, I was, my vocabulary had kind of evaporated. And I wasn't able to finish certain sentences. I was really anxious about speaking in front of the group. So it was a really horrible experience. But having him there made me feel even more nervous. It didn't feel supportive. It felt punitive. And then the feedback from him was quite crushing. I just kind of thought, this isn't really the time to be evaluating my kind of group therapy skills. No. It's kind of, I felt like I was treated as if I was almost sort of taking the piss, asking for a phased return.
So this was this then before you took the 2 months off, or was it after?
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
So that
was a really, really tough time for you then.
Yeah, I felt like I was being questioned and undermined, and like I was treated with suspicion. I think another thing that's come to light, which was really useful, was I eventually had a new manager, thank goodness. But she said to me one day, you know, Kim, when you're unwell or when you say these things are going on for you, I have no idea. Like, so I've obviously got this sort of stellar poker face at times. And I think it's just that my, you know, need to be seen to be doing a good job or need to be seen to be professional. But it's made me realise how difficult I can be to read.
Okay.
Even for people that spend the majority of, you know, I spend the majority of my time with my work colleagues. So even then they found it difficult to read me. So it's made me be a bit more open about what's going on in my head and how I'm feeling and how that's affecting me. Because, and I guess that's part of doing this as well, doing this podcast, because it's not useful for anyone. It's not useful for me or the people around me if they have no idea what's going on in my head.
No, okay.
Which I think the majority of people walk around in some kind of inner turmoil at any point during any given day.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to tell. Wouldn't
know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just have a few questions then on just some of the things that you said. So you mentioned a journal, keeping a journal.
Yeah.
Can you just say a little bit more about that, if you don't mind?
Yeah, so when I started training to be a counsellor, you have to keep a reflective journal.
Okay.
And it's kind of, it's not there to write about your clients as such. It's to write about the effect that your clients has had on you.
Okay.
So it's kind of what's going on with you in the work with the client. So that's when I started journaling, because I had to. You had to do like however much, like a page a week or something, I think, was our guidance.
Okay.
And that was like going back to like 2010, I think, when I started training to be a counsellor. And then I was like, oh, this is really useful. Several points in my life, I attempted to write a diary and write in it every day and maybe got to like day 7 and then just forgot the diary for the rest of the year. I found it really, really beneficial to kind of document patterns of like things that I would do to like sabotage myself, like in terms of my self-care, like either drinking too much, like staying up late, eating badly or whatever it might be. But it would usually happen, like there'd usually be something that would trigger those kind of sabotaging behaviours. So yeah, I noticed it was useful. It's kind of like holding up a mirror to yourself. So, yeah, I guess I've been doing it since 2010.
Okay.
And it's something I've continued to do now.
Yeah.
And that was how I realised that things were starting to get better.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Is by reading back over the pages and just being like, oh, this isn't so despairing anymore. Mm. Like, there's actually some happy times in here.
After you got the diagnosis then of the hyperthyroid, is that something that then, one, was a relief, I assume?
Massive relief.
And two, did it then have a knock-on effect of giving you more ability to be able to take care of yourself or to seek further help for how you're feeling?
Definitely. It kind of, in a way, I'm kind of grateful it's happened because it's made self-care, like, I have to have that at the forefront of my life.
Okay.
Previously, I've helped manage mental health by doing kind of high-intensity cardio stuff, but with the weight gain, that's just, like, seemed ridiculous. Like, the thought of going jogging when I'd gained so much weight was just really shaming and exposing. But, walking and... my dog has kind of been my saviour throughout this. I think animals are so intuitive. And just having that company there and not having to be any particular way, not having to put on any sort of facade or front in front of Percy, my dog, because he, whatever I am, he will just go along with and accept.
Yeah, of course.
And it's just a really unifying experience. I've always loved nature, but I think as I've sort of been practicing mindfulness, I've just been more like acutely aware of just having gratitude for nature.
Okay.
Nature's sort of rejuvenation and how it just keeps on going. It's cyclical and regardless of the weather, it just sort of battles through and adapts to whatever the climate brings. I think that's quite inspiring for, you know, the change of seasons for people who are struggling with mental health.
Just a couple more things then before we move on to the up. I was just wondering, because right at the start you mentioned how you've kind of withdrawn from friends and friendship groups. So how did you reintegrate into those friendships and things after you were feeling better? Was it a natural process?
It's interesting, actually, because that's kind of been really significant, actually, is who I've reconnected with and how I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my personal boundaries were not great, and I think that kind of led to me kind of burning the candle at both ends.
Okay.
Quite a lot. So I think at the point of me having the car accident, I wasn't very resilient. I wasn't kind of looking after myself very well. I didn't have healthy relationships around me. Luckily, I was going to CODA, which is like Codependency Anonymous, and kind of exploring ways in which I was sort of, my self-esteem was hinged on other people's validation and acceptance of me. And that was really, really helpful. So I was really cautious after being so kind of solitary for those months off work. I was really cautious of who do I contact and what contact do I want to have with them? Because I guess a lot of my friendships were around like, do you want to go out for dinner? Do you want to go to the pub? Do you want to, do you want to go to this festival? It's kind of around partying. And that was, I just didn't have the energy or the inclination to do that anymore.
Yeah.
So that was a real change, I guess, that people would have noticed, like, oh, Kim doesn't want to do this anymore, or, oh, okay. And for some people, it just meant they stopped asking me to do things, and we naturally drifted apart because I guess their agenda in the friendship wasn't being satisfied anymore.
Yeah, okay.
So there's certainly friends that the friendship discontinued gradually, which was fine. I kind of was accepting of that. And there's been other friendships that I undervalued massively. I'd overlooked people that are now kind of really staple in my kind of support network. And I think...
So overlooked in what sort of way?
As in, I just didn't realise... how maybe because we didn't have exactly the same hobbies or maybe because we were different ages or, you know, we're in different lines of work or whatever. Maybe I just hadn't kind of thought of them as a really good friend before.
Okay.
And actually, they're the ones that are still there, like, years later. So my friendship groups really changed. I've still got some sort of key people that I've sort of known from when I've lived in other places before I moved to Bristol, and they've remained constant. But in some way or other, every single one of my relationships has changed.
Okay.
Including the relationship with my parents, which was never great. But it's, I suppose in some ways it's strengthened because I've been less willing to put on a front in my relationships.
Okay, yeah.
Less willing to appease others and kind of more open and honest about who I am, what I need.
That leads on then to the last kind of question that I had, and that is in terms of, yeah, you mentioned before that one of the things that's come out of this experience has been you being more open as a person, easier to read. So I was just wondering what other longer-term impacts, if any, there have kind of been.
Yeah, I guess my ability to be more honest with myself, which is kind of going along the same lines as the being open. It's like the being open has come from me being more comfortable in my own skin, realising my limitations. So can't go to, you know, this festival, that festival, and party in the summers like I used to be able to. Can't stay up till 6 a.m. dancing. and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
So if other people aren't, then I'm okay with, you know, finding other ways of doing things together or drifting apart. I'm actually sort of, there's a confidence and a conviction, I suppose, in my own, my limitations. It's, that sounds quite negative, but just what I can bring to the table,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what is feasible for me to give to friendships. And I'm still one of those people that would always be at the end of the line if someone, you know, really needed someone to chat to. But I have noticed that, I guess, since I've had more of my own difficulties, that people would probably do that maybe less. Whereas before, I was a bit of a closed book.
Okay.
If you're a good listener in a closed book, you're probably going to end up listening to other people's problems a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm kind of more open and honest about who I am and what I need and want, that takes up more space. So you're going to have a more reciprocal relationship because it's less one way. Yeah. And it's been interesting, actually, watching people respond to me differently because I am different. It's changed the dynamics of my friendships, and it's the relationships that it's strengthened are like really good, healthy relationships that I'm really lucky to have in my life. So it's definitely the whole experience has definitely taught me who my real friends are.
Yeah,
that's kind of a cliche that's really
really
totally based on truth.
Yeah, I think, you know, lots of things sound cliche, but obviously
They're there for a reason.
Exactly. So, yeah, I suppose then one final thing. Is there anything that you think you would have done differently, like it with hindsight, with great power of hindsight? Are you kind of...
I would have been more forceful with the NHS.
Okay.
In terms of fighting, well, my rights, really. Yeah, it's my right to get a diagnosis. My right to not be treated as if my weight gain was all my fault. That was really unhelpful. And to have judgmental professionals sort of not really trying to help me, but trying to get me to go away. And just accept that it was all my fault. But I knew it wasn't. And I suppose the real key indicator was like my sense of smell. Like, what was insanely sensitive all of a sudden. And certain smells would, like, turn my stomach. So then I was... At one point, I took a pregnancy test, but I actually hadn't had sex for ages. And there's no way I could have been pregnant, but I was just like, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
Like, immaculate conception. But, I just saw this female GP one day, and she was brilliant. She kind of just got it. And listened to me.
Okay. So thank you. Thanks for the down. Moving on to the up.
So the up is the aftermath, I suppose.
Okay.
The up has been 2019 okay. so far. I've got a new job.
Yeah.
I've left my old job after 5 years. As I said, I've got different friends in my life, which has been really important. It's just the kind of daily gratitude that I feel. Not every day, that's a lie. I still
it's
have
not be ridiculous.
Monday mornings, it's just like, oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel really, really, really conscious of who I am and what impact I have on others.
Mm.
Even things like the people that I follow on social media.
Okay.
Because I think social media is something that I've had a love-hate relationship with. You know, at times it's really put me on a downward spiral, but these days I try and follow like Jamila Jamil, the I Weigh community. There's this brilliant person, Your Fat Friend.
Okay.
It's kind of looking at judgments levelled towards fat people in society. Her words, fat, she refers to herself as fat. And that's been really, really helpful just to have these like positive sources of anti-shame.
Mm. Okay.
Kind of really looking at how women have been shamed for their bodies, how, you know, weight and dress sizes is kind of like a capitalist construct.
Mm.
And it's really, really shaming and putting people into constraints and brackets that we don't need to be in. We don't need to think of our bodies in that way. So that's been really important for me, actually.
Just gaining knowledge or thinking about things in a slightly different way.
Throwing my scales out and not replacing them.
Okay.
That's been really important. Not having that acute awareness of, oh, this is a bigger size than I thought I'd have to have. Or, you know, whereas before I'd get so angry thinking, well, this should fit me, you know, surely I'm this size. I just kind of like think, okay, whatever. I can't, you know, I have no control over the manufacturer of that item of clothing.
Of
why they've made it ridiculously small in order to, you know, make women feel awful about themselves. I just kind of accept it, like, okay, well, I'm just going to buy whatever size looks best.
And I suppose then, to me, what you're describing then is like a, more of an acceptance of who you are and how you are kind of in the world and within your world, I suppose, and the world, the kind of world that you've created in terms of your friends and your family and things like that. Would that be...
Definitely, it's creating a safer world for me to live in. And, you know, outside of me, things haven't changed very much. In fact, politically, they've probably got worse. not that that's actually very funny, but it's always laughing out of despair.
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess another thing is being slightly less politically active. And that doesn't mean ignorant.
No.
It just means I don't watch the news.
I mean,
I've got Netflix on my laptop, but I don't really have a telly. So not watching the news, not buying any newspapers, because it just has too big an impact on me.
Absolutely.
I can be utterly consumed by it. It's just simple steps that I focus on, you know, not focusing on what size clothes are, not following people on social media that present an unattainable image of themselves to the world. Do you know what I mean? I
want to absolutely
see people being real
opposed
to being manufactured and polished and edited. And it's amazing the difference just going through your Instagram friends and deleting anyone who's just constantly taking these edited selfies of themselves or promoting, I don't know, detox teas and all that nonsense. Just taking that out and replacing it with real things.
I know what you mean. And this is the kind of, I suppose, the underpinning of the Up and Down podcast for me, you know, as however people, you know, want to take it, however they want to focus. You know, you're talking about your mental health, and that's absolutely great. For other people, it might be something different. But I think that what's the core message for me is around that the reality, you know, there are different versions of reality, and that's, you know, perpetuated by things like social media. And, you know, I think that this is for me about trying to represent real lives, you know, and the actual realities, you know, kind of stripping away to the core, I suppose, of people's experiences.
I don't know, just went off on a tangent there. Sorry.
Yeah, and again, I suppose from a personal point of view, I think it resonates with me what you're saying in terms of just feeling more comfortable and I suppose grounded in who you are and what you want in life, and that making you, I suppose, feel better. But where do you think that comes from for you? Is it literally as you get older because you've had more experiences, or is it the experience that you went through, you know, that we've already talked about? What is it for you that...
I think it's a bit of everything, really. I see the accident as a gift.
Okay.
It was kind of the end of one chapter, which was harmful for me, and the beginning of another one. And I've been given this opportunity to look after myself better.
Okay.
Because I've had to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you get diagnosed with an autoimmune disease, you need to start looking after yourself better, else it's going to be a bit of a miserable life for you. So it I do kind of see it as a gift, and not every day when I'm, you know, wading through treacle and feeling like shit, but most of the time I do see it as a gift, because it's invited new people into my life that are really valuable. It's meant that some people have exited, and I've kind of said a fond farewell to certain friends. But it's made me appreciate that relationships are transient.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
I don't have to have the same people in my life throughout, apart from my family. Not going to divorce them. Yeah, relationships are transient. I guess it is part of getting older as well, getting into my mid-30s and valuing being a single woman who's child-free. Child-free kind of mostly by choice, but also, yeah, not really knowing whether that would be an option for me anyway. You know, thyroids affect everything. So, yeah, but just being grateful for the opportunities it's given me. Really loving my new job. It's kind of, maybe it's that whole like life's too short thing as well, because it's just made me think about my previous job. Like, you know, there was so much commuting, like 2 hours a day of commuting to get to it. I was like, this isn't feasible with my health anymore. It's just made me reevaluate everything. I value my own space and time much more than I used to. I'm more careful about who I let in to my personal sphere. So yeah, it's just kind of the worst time of my life has kind of turned into a really valuable lesson. And from that, I kind of feel so much more self-contented now than I did previous to the accident. So yeah, 32-year-old Kim was... couldn't really look after herself. Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's really amazing to hear that. And I think it just, again, another cliche, but you know, out of adversity comes whatever the say is. But, yeah. But you know.
But yeah, I think that's really good in terms of sort of building your resilience and being able to cope with just day-to-day life in ways that are just a bit more acceptable to you, is really important. So then the last thing is another cliche, but if you were going to give one piece of advice to someone, like, what would it be? And I'm aware that this is potentially a daft question, because, you know, it depends what that person is doing at a particular time as to what advice you might give, but... kind of generally speaking.
Spend time getting to know yourself, because essentially you are all that you have. Like, you are the beginning and end of your abilities. Like, get to know what your strengths are, what your things to work on are. Get to know what makes you happy, what doesn't. You know, what is it that you need in order to feel safe? Just spend some time getting to know you. Modern time, when most people meet others on internet dating, that whole why don't you date yourself? Like, but in a way, there's some real value to that, and that's kind of what I've been doing. for a good while now is kind of having date nights.
Yeah.
Okay. with myself and Percy. Just making nice food for myself, or watching a film, or you know, making sure that there's space in my life to replenish and like nourish me. Making sure I've got nice things around me to look at. I'm a very kind of visual person, so need to have nice pictures and nice textures and stuff. So like I spend quite a bit of time making sure my flat looks the way I like it to, and so that I feel safe there.
Yeah, no, that makes
sense. It's not just about sort of keeping up with the Joneses, or oh, look at my fancy pants lamp. It's kind of, you know, it's I feel safe and comfortable around these colours and shapes.
Yeah.
Sounds a bit.
No. I totally know what you mean. It's
really important, actually.
Yeah, I think it can be really, really important to have at least one space that you can completely control, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's really key, actually.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
I massively appreciate it. Yeah, thank you very much.
Cool, it's been a pleasure.
I was going to say, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Thank you.
Cool. No worries. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Up and Down podcast today. I hope you enjoyed the episode and are looking forward to next month's episode. If you would like to rate and review or subscribe, however you want to do that through whichever podcast app, then that would be really great, because it just helps the algorithms, I believe, and helps other people be able to find the podcast. So yeah, that would be much appreciated. And like I said at the beginning, if you'd like to support what I'm doing on the Up and Down podcast, then you can do so by heading over to patreon.com/updown. Updown is all one word, obviously. And yeah, you can support the podcast and get some perks for doing so for as little as $2 a month, which is about £1.50, £1.56. But obviously, if you don't want to do that, then that's absolutely fine. Just hope that you continue to keep listening and enjoy the content. Okay, thank you. Bye.